Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Carulla and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio.
This is Nikki Carulla. Eddie Pence is on vacation. Quick silence of the movie clip. We're going to jump right into this interview. We have Mark Dennis and Ben Foster, two filmmakers all the way from Austin, Texas. Oh, yeah. And silence the crowd, just like that. How you guys doing?
Doing good.
Doing great. Love that you started out with the Goonies.
Yeah. Why not? We're in that generation, man. Yeah. One of my favorite movies. Man, I just did an escape room. Do you guys ever do escape rooms?
Yeah.
I just did an escape room about a week, 2 weeks ago, and it was called Ghost Ship, and the whole thing was Goonies. It was awesome.
That's awesome.
It was.
Is it here?
Yeah, it's right on. It was right on Melrose, Melrose, and about Poinsettia.
Okay,
dude, it is incredibly Goonies. I won't tell you anything else.
That's cool.
But
that sounds fun. That
if you like Goonies, dude, you'll love it. Yeah. You will love it. So, anyways, yeah, I love the Goonies.
One of the banes of our existence is a escape room in like Ogden, Utah, called Time Trap.
Yeah, because if you Google Time Trap, that's our movie,
I think we've got them beat up.
You beat our way out of Google.
Let's take them.
I think we're getting to the top.
That's crazy.
Yeah,
so, Ogden, Utah.
Nobody go there.
Of all places.
I plugged them. I blew it.
You guys are originally from Austin, Texas. Is that right?
I'm from San Antonio, but okay. we met in Austin at film school, and then we came out here and have been back and forth for the last like 10 or 15 years.
Where'd you go for film school? University of Texas?
Yeah, University of Texas.
You know, I went to USC, so that runs deep. It's a cut that runs deep. You know, it's like, I don't want to talk about that national championship.
Nobody's perfect, man. It's fine.
Yes. You know what? I'll tell you, that game was one of the most painful games to watch as a USC fan. I would give up so many other victories to get that one back, and I know a lot of USC fans agree with me.
I don't know very much about sports, but that was the one game that I did watch because I was on campus. I lived like a block from the school, and when we won, it was chaos in the streets. It was like Mardi Gras times 10, and it happened in 5 seconds. Like everybody ran outside, and it was just cheering and just something. It was like nothing I'd ever seen before.
Man. That just hurts.
I wish I cared more.
You're like, I wish I cared about sports. No, you know what? I'm usually not like that about sports, but with USC, it's a whole different thing. It's like when you go to the school and you kind of like, you love football, and I grew up with it since I was a kid. So anyways, so you guys met in film school, and how did you guys kind of like join a partnership together to know that you want to make movies together?
We got teamed up in a class. We were just basically the odd man out of, you know, the teacher was, you know, he was like, you guys are going to do a project. And Mark was always the guy that had a great story. And I feel like I was always making stuff. You know, growing up in Austin, I ended up doing like side work in college for musicians. So I would do like their music videos or their.
That's awesome.
You know, whatever, film a show for them. And that, I don't know, exposed me to a lot of cameras and stuff early on, and just dealing with people and delivering a product.
I don't think I developed a visual style yet at that point in my filmmaking, but I'd done a lot of writing like since I was, you know, 10 or 11 years old. And when we got paired up in that class, it was like Ben was the guy who had by far, and like everybody was like, that guy's shorts are really cool. Like, he knows what he's doing. He's good with the camera. He's good at figuring stuff out that you wouldn't normally put in a short film. And for some reason, we were both like the B team that nobody had picked to pair up with, and we were
the underdogs.
Together. Yeah, we wound up together, and
we made
a really cool short film. And then from then on, it was just like we recognized that we complimented each other a lot.
And that short film was Strings? Like, is that?
No, that was called Lonely Gun.
Okay,
that was like way back. That was something small. Strings was our first feature film. We made that a few years ago before Time Trap.
And how many years in between? What did you say? Lonely Gun was
in 2005, and then we made another short called Billy the Squid, and then another one called The Alternate. And we finally, when we made The Alternate, it was this time travel thing, and we'd spent 5 months on it. And by the time we were done, we were like, we should have just made a feature film. Like, we spent so much time doing this, it wouldn't take much more. So we decided we were going to take that next step. Ben's laughing at me. Go ahead.
We were so wrong.
Hindsight's 2020.
Way more.
Well,
but to be dumb enough to go ahead and go for it is, you know, the reason we're sitting here.
I think as a filmmaker, you have to be equal parts realistic and idealistic. And whenever you're young like that, you cannot be that realistic because you'll just go, oh, this is impossible.
You almost have to make mistakes, though.
For sure.
You know, that's part of the process
of being
an artist.
Time. Yeah.
And then you just fail. You slowly start getting better as you fail less and you fail more at the same time.
You know? And you don't tell people about your failures. They just think, oh, you've done a bunch of cool stuff. It's like, yeah, I also did a bunch of stuff that sucked that nobody saw that like really humiliated me.
And then they tell you you're an overnight success.
Right.
Well, that was 10 years in the making. That's got to be a huge jump, though, from making shorts. You made 3 shorts and then you made your first feature length.
Yeah, we made our first feature in, I don't know, 2008 or 9 or...
Yeah, we started shooting a little over, like, 10 years ago.
Ben was still in school. He was still finishing up his last semester at UT, and he had to, like, leave every Monday or Tuesday
to go to class. Shoot on Mondays. I had to go to school.
That's awesome. that makes for a great story.
But we got discounts, like, student discounts.
Right.
Some of the gear from the school, and just generally, like, being younger, you get away with
everybody wants to
stuff.
Help you. Everybody wants to help. Yeah. They see that, like, you know, spark and that you're going somewhere and you're trying to do something. Even if you're not, they still want to help you do everything that they can to get you where you want to be.
And Austin was such a perfect place for that, too, because it was like a growing city. Everybody, it hadn't been jaded by commercials wanting to come shoot in their restaurants and things like that. And everybody was just so helpful. And I grew up there, so I knew a lot of, you know, people that owned a restaurant or a car dealership to get us a car.
That was always the thing. He was just like, write whatever you can, but I can also get this if you need it. I got a friend that owns this bar. If we need, like, 10 Tahoes, I can get that. I'm like, okay.
You're like, dude, who are you?
Yeah, no, he just knew everybody. So no matter what we needed, it was always possible to get it. I didn't know anybody like that.
Now I moved back, and I don't know anybody again.
Yeah, damn. Well, I'm like that in this city. I got this city dialed in. But whenever I go to other cities, it's like, all right, I got to get my bearings, and I have to, like, kind of reach out to kind of find those same kind of connections. It's nice when you're, like, rooted in a city and you can kind of make those connections. Mm-hmm. I got nothing but love for Austin. Great brisket, great music. My favorite musician of all time is from there, Stevie Ray Vaughan. I mean,
cool.
Austin's just a vibrant city full of filmmakers. How long did it take for you to write your first short together? And then what was the duration of time that went from your short finished with the screenplay to your shooting and you're finished with that?
From the first short?
Yeah.
I think, I don't even remember. That was so long ago. Probably like a night I wrote it in and then brought it to class. I mean, it was like a 3 or 4 page short though. Like,
yeah, but writing a good short is takes some time.
Yeah, I mean, or it was, I don't know.
Or just a spark of genius.
I don't know if it was a good one. I could probably knock one out right now taking a shit if I needed to. But, you know,
nice.
A feature film takes a little bit more time than that. 2 or 3 days.
And we like that.
Sweet.
Sweet. That's awesome. So you guys didn't write together, or did you write together?
No, Mark, like I said, Mark's always the story guy. He's always got an idea, and I can usually, you know, figure out a way to add to it and a way to get it done. But that's, luckily, this note app in Mark's phone is just filled with nonsense.
Yeah, I can't stop.
And there's
going to
be
notes.
There's great ideas in there.
Usually what happens is I'll come up with ideas that I feel are presentable to him. Because a lot of times I'll have an idea and I'll tell him, and he's just like, no, that doesn't make sense. That's... People are going to be really mad if we make that, or yeah, you can make that, but I'm not going to help. But then I'll have, like, you know, 3 or 4 that he's like, that's really cool, we should work on that. And then maybe I'll go home and work on a script and have something, and like maybe half a script that I'll bring to him, and he'll look at it and be like, okay, this is actually worth our time. That's usually what it is. It's a lot of it is pitching to him, because I have to get him on board. If I don't have him on
board, I
got nothing.
What, you could be just shooting down the next Godfather, though. You don't know. You don't know, right? No, that's part of the beauty of team.
No, he can tell. Yeah. When we first did Time Trap, I remember I had the idea for it. I was actually staying at his place. He was out of town. And I had the idea, and I told his roommate about it. I was like, I've got this idea for this story. I'm, like, really excited about it, and I think it's something that we could make for nothing. We could shoot it as a found footage movie. And I remember I told him about it, and he was like, Yeah, it's cool, but I think that the characters would figure out that there's a time that they've gone forward in time. I think they would figure that out sooner than the audience, and it would cause problems. And that was a big rub in the beginning, as I wasn't sure if it was the idea that was the problem or if it was the execution that was the problem. Turned out it was the execution that was the problem. I went to Thailand, I actually wrote the script in a few days, and then I sent him a draft of it, and then we like just snowballed and started going into production. It was written in the middle of May, and we were shooting in the middle of August.
So it took you like a couple weeks to write the feature length?
I mean, I think I wrote the first draft of the feature in probably 4 days.
Man.
And that was going around to people.
That's
and then
crazy.
But we were doing a lot of rewrites, though. Like, there's constantly a developmental process, even including actors, and sometimes we'll have our friends come in and we do table reads. And if you're a screenwriter and you're listening to this and you're trying to figure out a way to make your script better, you should definitely get all your friends around a table and do a table read. If for no other reason, to get people to actually read your script, because a lot of times people don't want to read your script. People don't even watch your TV show or your movie sometimes. They don't have the time or they
even
don't want to.
Even once it's finished and it's got
but
hype.
But if you can get your friends around a table and get them to do a table read, you'll find out so much about it that's not working. And that's what we did a lot in Austin, was we did some table reads and we had some actors come in that we were truly auditioning for the movie, and we found so many things that we needed to change about it, so that by the time we were on set, I was still writing the script every morning whenever the actors would come in. I'm like, okay,
that's
so here's your pages for today. In the first week, I think they thought that was just like, okay, this is unusual that you guys are changing the script so much. But by the end, they were just like, whatever, we're just going to roll with the punches and see whatever happens.
But see, I find that sometimes the best art is cultivated like that.
For sure.
You know, I did a film score with Danny Elfman, one of his first ones. And, he was kind of like a mad scientist. And he was constantly rewriting stuff on the spot. And like, we had just rehearsed all this music, and he was just like throwing it on the spot. It's kind of like the same parallel, like, there's something that triggers that moment of creativity that you cannot force that. It comes in the moment, and it comes sometimes right before you're about to shoot,
yeah.
You know?
So glad to hear that. That's like a big boost for our self-esteem to
know
that we're not
just I think it's
stupid,
amazing
yeah.
that it's attention to detail, and that you are so dedicated to the craft. That means
And that's what happens whenever we'll do a cut of the movie. I'll do a cut, and I'll send it to Ben, and I'll think that it's like pretty good, and there's not much to change, and he'll
rip it apart.
Oh my God.
What is this? Who do you think you are?
Notes and notes and notes. But all of those notes are things that really bring the movie around and make it much better. So and you got to, you have to be open to the changes along the way.
Yeah. But I would say that approach lends to absolute chaos on set.
Yeah, no,
so
of course.
I think this should be a
well, it's not
benchmark.
Something that you always
it's
want.
It's not the plan.
Yeah,
for
of course.
Sure, it's not the plan.
But yeah, no, we got the fact that we had the resources to start shooting when we did, and that was in line. You know, we had another film that we were going to do, and when he sent me this script, we were both traveling, and I was like, "This is better than what we're planning to shoot in September. We've got to switch the scripts, and then keep the shoot date." And so that's kind of why it was pushed together.
That's amazing.
And you want to say that, oh yeah, and then it all worked out, but it didn't all work out. There were so many problems along the way. You have to massage it to work out so that over the course of 2 or 3 years, it seems like it works out. But it's just problems along the way that you're
but you
constantly
know what?
Putting out
fires. I always think about this too, because like I'm a musician. When I make records, there's always something that gets in the way. And I was just reading about George Lucas making Star Wars and the amount of obstacles that went into it, from Luke Skywalker getting into a car accident in the middle of shooting to there was a huge dust storm that like wrecked all their sets. You're gonna have that, and that's kind of like what makes it sweeter in the end when it's finished. Like most people in the audience, when they're like, yeah, it was cool, they don't understand what goes into creating something, especially something like a feature film, which is probably the most alive medium today. You know what I mean? It's like, I would say, you know, I came from the world of opera, and that was like the medium for centuries. And it's like now feature films, that's what that is. It's
movies are just
that.
A ton of artists getting together and putting their art together, and some of them are trying to do their own thing, but there's a bigger artist who's telling them what to do, and then the fact that they even ever come together and work is a miracle in general.
Yeah, you're doing an album, a 90-minute flip book, and all of the visual effects in that thing. It's such a symphony of different mediums that are all in one piece.
So what was the duration of time from shooting to editing and finishing?
We shot for 22 days, and then as soon as we got done shooting, Ben was handling the rest of the, I guess, the wrap-up of the production. I went into editing and immediately did a cut of the movie, and then we started working on that a little bit, and then we did another, I guess like another 10 days. We shot in Austin for that first bit, and then another 10 days in LA. Did a cut of the movie, used that to raise some more money. It took us 6 or 7 months to get some more money to shoot even more scenes, and then we did like another two week round of shooting.
Wow.
Yeah. So a year and a half, 2 years total maybe.
Yeah. That's amazing. It was a lot of pieces, and we're lucky to have actors and crew members that are willing to come back. But I think, you know, not every movie's done the same way.
That's the beauty of it, though.
And I think, really. And I think when you break up the shooting like that, it's a living thing that sort of tells you what it needs as you edit it. When you shoot a movie, you can't see, you know, exactly what you have until you're in the editing room and you come up with different ideas and all that stuff. And I think being able to have those phases of shooting allowed the story to kind of grow the way it needed to, and there's some awesome stuff in there because of it.
Also, not having a locked release date is super helpful. Like these big movies, they have a year, they have 2 years, and they've got to do everything within that amount of time. We didn't have a release date, so we were always able to, how could we make this better? And sometimes they don't have that option.
And I know you're fans of Indiana Jones from reading parts of this movie.
Totally.
Just yeah. Because I think I read the premise and I'm like, I really like these guys. They like Indiana Jones. This is definitely like a new modified arrangement of characters and kind of using like a Scooby-Doo, you know, kind of effect with it too. But then also adding this futuristic element to it. How did you kind of come up with the story? And then how did you visualize it? I'm going to ask you first the story and then you putting the visuals together.
The story came from, we were trying to put another movie together called Enduro, and we had a locked shoot date, a start date for that movie. And while we were trying to get that movie going and get some actors to come in and do that one, I was very frustrated that every time we would send an actor like a proposal, he would just not respond. Like Billy Bob Thornton didn't get back to us, Pierce Brosnan didn't get back to us, and we were like really bummed out by that. And I felt like if I could just like go into the closet and come out, and it would be 2 weeks later, I would have an answer of where I'm going to be with my life. And I thought, oh, that's cool. What if there's like a closet that you could go into and then come out, and everything would be a different time? There's like a, you know, time dilation thing there. And then I thought, wait a second, what would be cooler than a closet? And I'd grown up in Central Texas where there's closets everywhere in Central Texas too. Houses are built with them. No, there's caves everywhere in Central Texas, and I think my whole childhood was spent going to all these caverns, and that is somehow how the movie came about. And as far as like the kids, like we've all gone through like childhood where we want to go and explore the woods and explore the unknown, and I think that combining the kids going to the woods and then eventually a cave that has like some kind of time travel shit is how it came together.
That's awesome. Yeah. And what about the visuals?
I mean,
like to put the whole story into a visual concept.
Yeah, I mean, I think some of the references that we looked at were Goonies. You know, we didn't want to tell a story that was something like The Descent, that's a totally scary, you know, black girl with a flashlight. Not a black girl with a flashlight, but black.
I got you.
black cave and then just, you know, light. So, you know, to do a movie that's kind of an 80s, like, adventure thing where it's fun and it's got a big idea and all that stuff. I mean, those are the movies that we loved growing up, and that's kind of what we try to do. So there's no scenes in the movie where it's totally dark. There's always a little bit of light on the cave and some texture and stuff like that.
That's awesome.
But yeah, I would say our 80s movies, 90s movies that we grew up with were the visual reference for it. And then the visual effects are all, you know, we had a visual effects guy that sort of guided us through some of it, but he couldn't be there on set every day. So, you know, it was a lot of just sort of figuring it out and matte paintings and things that they would do, you know, in Star Wars where they extend a set, you know, up high or down low and things like that. So
at some point we figured out that anything that was like done during the 80s or 90s before CGI took over everything, we could still do that.
Right.
So I think we had to take the script that we had and the ideas that we had and work those into the creative process that we actually were able to do with the resources that we had. And I think a lot of that was just, you know, having worked on other things and done behind the scenes, watching up behind the scenes to know that. What are you laughing at?
The black girl thing.
You're like, damn it! It's recorded forever.
I blew it.
It's all right. You didn't. We forgive you.
I want to make you a shirt with a black girl with a flashlight. It's going to be your new meme.
That's the sequel.
You're just being racially aware and conscious. That's it's on your mind. It's the next movie.
Yeah, next time.
So how many people were in the shoot total?
We had some days. We had skeleton crew days where we would have maybe 10 people, and that's a lot easier to – it's a lot easier to work that way because you could just – it's easier to move everybody at one time or explain everything at one time. You don't have to wait as much. But then we had days where we would have 70 to 100 people on set. So it was never never the same. It was just based on what the needs were of that day or that week.
And those are always like stunt guys and lighting guys. And, you know, the way the cave – so this was a cave that was on a friend of mine's property. And he allowed us to take it over for a lot longer than I promised him. But this cave basically just had a sort of a pit on the property, and you could get to the cave through another tunnel. But you know, we built onto the cave, and so Madison Fisk, our production designer, and Sean White, our art director, you know, constructed this wall. You know, that goes up, and then we had a grid for lighting, and then we had a grid for stunts and all this stuff. And those days with a ton of people were always the ones that everybody just ended up on top of each other in this small space in the cave and above the cave. And it was a, I don't know.
And how many hours? You do 10, 12?
Oh, man. We did 18, 20 hours a day, but the cast and the crew, we were only allowed to have them for 12 or 16 hours,
maybe? I think
we pushed everybody every day, for sure. And we had some kids on set, and the rules are different with kids. So they would have to, you know, be done or start later or leave earlier. But, I mean, it was a grueling, grueling shoot. Like, I don't think we ever had a day of fewer than 10 hours.
Yeah. I think there was, oh, no, that was Strings. There was one day where we had a 24-hour day.
Oh, yeah.
Not sure why.
That happens.
Yeah, we had two different crews. We had one crew for the first 12, and then for the second 12, we were like, if you want to stay, you're welcome to, and everybody stayed for full 24 hours.
And now you guys got some awards for Strings, correct? At a couple different film competitions?
Yeah, we went to, we went to about 18 different festivals across the country. We won a couple of Best Director Awards, 3 Audience Awards, Best Feature Film Award, a Best Thriller, just stuff all over the board. And with Time Trap, we won Most Innovative Feature Film at the Hollywood Film Festival.
That's awesome.
Yeah, that was really cool. Yeah.
Does it add a little bit of pressure when you won an award on your first one and then you're trying to make the second one?
I think so. I think that people expect, oh, you're an award-winning filmmaker, and you're like, well, you know, you've always got to outdo yourself. I think that the movie outdid the first movie in a different way. Like, the first one is much more of like a family story, and it's more about like this guy's journey. This one is just fun. It's just kids in a cave. Crazy shit happens. Where are we going to go? What are we doing here? This is bizarre. I didn't expect to be here. And then by the end of the movie, you're just like, what did I just watch? And that's been a consistent thing, is people reading the script, they were like, I did not know I was watching that movie. The trailers made me think I was watching this, and then I was watching that. You guys are bonkers.
Yeah, and that's one of the reasons that we ended up doing this movie instead of the other one, because even just reading the first draft, it's like, I don't know where this is going to go. And
did you feel lost reading it?
Not lost, but just... No, it's not a lost thing. It's just that's what you want out of a movie.
It's not predictable.
You don't want to be able to predict what's going to happen next. And I don't think you can with this movie.
So you've already released the movie, correct?
It's out in some countries. I know that it's out in some parts of Africa and Asia. But it's not, we don't have a domestic release yet. We're still
in the middle of our festival run. Mm-hmm. So we play Houston in a few weeks and Hill Country Film Festival. And we've got another one in May that
we can't announce it until they announce it, but we have another one. So 3 weekends in a row we're playing.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it's cool.
Yeah,
it's fun.
Cool.
Well, let's play the trailer real quick, shall we? This is Time Trap.
Also known as Black Girl with the Flashlight.
Part one.
Feel it.
Yeah, that was awesome. Very nice. Silence the crowd. That's, dude, I'm watching it. People were listening to it. That was awesome. First of all, the cave is like a character in your movie.
It is, for sure.
It's fantastic. I mean, yeah. It just looks cool. The characters look like they're in it, and it's like the visuals are intense.
Yeah.
It looks like a fun movie.
Should we tell them where to find the trailer right now?
Yeah,
like, so there, it's,
please.
Where's it been? Vimeo? Just Google, yes. Google Time Trap Trailer, yeah, time, and then our names, and you'll find trailer. It.
Yeah.
That was, I mean, honestly, I was watching, I was like, man, this is a movie I'd totally be into. I love those adventure kind
of
movies.
I would pirate the shit out of this movie.
Now, let me ask you this. When it came to casting, how did you kind of decide your characters? Did somebody walk in, you were like, that's the guy, that's the girl?
Well, we had a casting director, J.C. Cantu, and he brought a lot of people to us. But even before that, we were kind of, we had, you know, people that we were working with to help us figure out the script. And when it was a found footage movie and we were going to do it for much less money, we were just going to take a camera into a cave and try to tell it all through the point of view of this one camera. When you see the film, you'll see that
it's not a found footage movie, just to clarify that.
But they discover a lot of things through GoPros that they're wearing. And so eventually our DP, Mike Simpson, he was like, you guys should try to raise more money and do this as like an actual cinematic film. It's going to be, it's just such a cool story. It deserves a more cinematic look and feel. And we ended up doing that, which is more expensive. And we got involved with our casting director, JC, and Mark Skyped with most of them.
Yeah, he basically, when we went from being a found footage movie that we were going to try to cast like some of our friends and some, you know, local Austin people, then it turned into a bigger movie. We were shooting on like a, you know, movie camera, and we had some money.
What did you shoot on?
Shot on a Red, was it Red Dragon with a weapon upgrade?
We've been making this so long, we've gone through like three generations of Reds. So it was a way,
that's like
was
the
a,
camera to use. That's what everybody says.
Yeah, it's looks a great, beautiful cinema camera. A Red, it was an Epic, a weapon, and then I guess a dragon was the last one.
Just a lot of cool words put
cool.
together.
Yeah, like, yeah. Just
something called
just
a blood.
Perfect for an adventure movie. Man.
Sure. our casting director, he would send me the reels of all of these actors who were available, and then have me go through and see which ones I liked, and then I would say I'd like to talk to this person, and then I spent maybe two or three days just doing like Skype interviews, auditions with them. Sometimes I would talk to them and you know, send them sides, and they would send me like a, you know, the lead actor, he did a reading with his wife, and he actually did a couple of different readings, and we were like, yeah, he was great, and we were excited to have him on. And then
yeah, he's awesome.
Two of the girls, I don't even think we knew who they were going to be until like a couple of days before. And you just, I think a lot of like finding the right performer is making sure it's somebody that you click with and somebody that you get along with, especially on a movie like this. It's like, it's super difficult. It's never an easy day, and you want somebody who's going to be cool and who's going to.
I just find that with art in general.
Yeah.
If
you're going to be in a boat
with assholes, then it's just going to cost you way more than what it's worth, you
sure.
know what I mean? But
yeah.
So you, absolutely, you want good people. So everybody collectively had a vision. There was no actor coming up to you and saying, you know what you should do for this one scene?
Well, Riley did.
We never had it that way. He was always very, he's incredibly intelligent, and he would always come in and be like, I don't think my character would say this. And that's always such an annoying thing for a director to hear, because
you're
it's like,
well, I created your character.
Yeah, but he would say that, and at first I would like dismiss him, and then he would point out why, and I'm like, oh man, that's really smart.
Right.
Hey Ben, I just thought of an idea that I'm going to change real quick. I want to let you know. And then I wouldn't tell him that Riley
ben
said
was
it.
Like, oh my God. I'm going to strangle you.
This was, no, but he saved us.
This
a
was Ben's inner monologue.
God damn it!
Every time you had a script rewrite or a new
for sure.
idea.
Oh,
but, you know, that's always part of the process. You know what I mean? It's kind of going in with it and kind of whittling it down to making it awesome.
Yeah, it's just a big block of wood that nobody knows what it's going to be, and you're just constantly just carving something out of it. And sometimes it's not what you want it to be, and then you have to carve a little bit more and maybe put some more wood on it too.
When did you know the film was done?
I knew the film was done. I think we did another. We were just about to show it at Berlin at a film market in Berlin, and our sales agent was like, he wanted us to cut out a little bit more. And I remember thinking like, it can't be cut down anymore. And I thought, well, let's just see if he's right. And I just went in and cut out, just made a bunch of really weird changes, and then nitpicked a ton of things and sent those to Ben to work on. And it worked. Like, it somehow just made it so the flow was so much better. The first time I showed it to somebody, they were like, holy shit, this is way better than what you had before. Mm-hmm. And we thought before we were done.
Yeah, we've thought we were done a few times before we were done.
Isn't that the biggest bitch.
It's the worst.
But you made something like this.
But the biggest change that you made, Mark, when you had it at one time, was taking. He took like 8 minutes of the movie and just moved it like 20 minutes back.
Hmm. And it somehow works with the story.
It's an odd, you know, time travel type thing, but it works perfectly. And not only does it get us into the cave and into the adventure faster with the kids, but it also helps explain the whole concept of the movie.
I love that.
Another way to answer your question
is just by making that film.
Yeah, totally.
When you know the movie's done is when. So when you watch the movie, you're going to cringe, and if like a lot. And every time you cringe, you write it down. Like, why did you cringe? Like this, you know, I had a problem with this. And sometimes that list is 100 long. Sometimes it's 20 long. You fix those 20 things, and then you go back and watch it again, and there's 100 new ones. It's finally when you can watch the movie, and you might cringe, but if you're only cringing about the things that you can't change. And once you stop cringing about the things you can change, that's when you know the movie's done.
Wow. And who are some of your favorite directors, both of you?
I like Ben Foster.
Very nice. And writers, too.
We both like a lot of the same people. I mean, we're guys from the 80s. My favorite movie is Terminator 2, so James Cameron is huge for me. Christopher Nolan is still great. I'll forgive him for Dunkirk. I didn't like it. We saw it together, and I couldn't get into it.
You're like, this sucks. You either loved it or hate it. That's what I find.
Yeah, all the Zemeckis Spielberg movies that we grew up with. And then one that we bonded over that was more modern during college was Shane Carruth.
Primer. It was a 2004 Special Jury Prize at Sundance. It was a little time travel movie that he made in Plano, Texas for $7,000. He did everything on it. He wrote it, directed it, shot it, scored it. His mom did the catering. And he got it to Sundance somehow, and it was amazing. And it's still like one of those movies that like you'll hear every once in a while some big A-list director will mention that movie in their Q&A because it's such an incredible movie. If you've never seen it, I think it's 71 minutes long. And you will not watch it once. You will watch it multiple times because every
time you Primer.
You should watch it tonight. Dude, every time you watch it, it'll blow your mind. It's incredible.
That's amazing.
And there's like no special effects in it. It's just mental.
Yeah, and he did the whole thing, you know, on 16. It was all loose ends, I think, off of the back of reels or stuff that they didn't use or something. But it was, you know,
Analog, another baby.
Texas. Yeah, he's from Dallas. It was another kind of Rodriguez $7,000 movie, but not an action movie. A total cerebral kind of cool thing.
Dude, I'm totally going to watch that tonight.
You should.
Yeah,
it's good.
So what film festivals are you applying to? And also, like, what's your vision as far as the trajectory of the film? Do you want it in major film houses? Do you want to kind of go the Netflix route? Like, where are you kind of seeing this movie?
Well, I think every filmmaker wants their movie to play in theaters, but that's not always the reality anymore because Netflix is so big. And you'll see A-list stars like Will Smith and their movie just plays on Netflix, and you're like, what happened to the industry? Like, it's crazy how much it's changed. So like, you want to do theatrical. We're hoping for limited theatrical. We've been talking to people about that right now, and then eventually it'll, you know, be on the usual platforms.
Netflix, like Fox Searchlights, like you want like the art houses or somebody like that that believes in it.
Yeah, that'd be great. I mean,
sometimes the majors, they just don't have the vision, you know.
Sure.
What I mean?
I don't, and even then, I don't know how realistic some of those are anymore for guys like us. Like, you have to really make a splash at a major festival, and you know, we hope that one day we'll get our break, and someone will see and be like, "Hey, you guys kicked ass on that movie. I have this idea for this script that I don't know how to do, but if you guys want to come in and do it for me, I'd like to hire you guys as the directors for it." And be like, "Yeah, that'd be really cool."
Did you guys apply to Sundance yet?
Oh, well, Sundance is long. I mean, we
finished the movie in January last year, basically. That's when we locked the edit, and we were still doing our sound mix like a year ago today, pretty much. So our premiere was at Seattle, and after Seattle we played the Austin Film Festival, we played Woodstock, supposedly we played in Japan at some point, but
right, I don't we've got a
we don't know exactly.
with Sundance though, if you play at another festival, you can't play
yeah,
Sundance.
No,
Sundance
they,
is
well,
a premiere only festival.
Right. Same with Cannes and
right,
and some of the other ones too. Right,
probably
South
Toronto.
By Southwest,
a lot of
them,
yeah.
No, South by Southwest isn't a premiere only festival. They actually get a lot of their movies from Sundance. Like, they go and watch movies at Sundance and then bring them in, but they're not premiere only. They have a lot of world premieres and a lot of domestic.
Yeah, it's a powerhouse
premieres.
Festival mm-hmm. for sure.
I play Sundance every year, so I always look for indie films.
Yeah.
I actually saw the short for Whiplash.
Oh, cool.
And then the following year, saw the first day that Whiplash premiered, and nobody knew what it was or anything. But because I saw that short, I was like, I wonder if it's the same. Uh-huh. Maybe. We'll see. And turns out they made the short. Damien Chazelle made the short and submitted it to Sundance, and they got funding for the movie after Sundance, and then ended up making the whole movie, and it was amazing to see that whole trajectory, just how they did it all independently, and it's awesome. So this movie, I hope, has great legs. I mean, we want to see it in movie theaters. This seems like a movie that would be cooler in the theaters.
You know, we've watched it so many times in the theater, and it's always a lot more fun in the theater. I mean, it's when people ask me if they can watch the movie, like, I don't mind sending them a link, but don't watch it on your laptop. Don't watch it on your iPad. Like, watch it on the biggest screen possible. It's a fun movie. It's a popcorn movie. Kids of any age can watch it. It's and you can watch it if you're 80 years old. We had, like, didn't, like, somebody's grandmother watch it that was 80 and not fall asleep?
Yeah, my great aunt watched it.
That's awesome.
She was into it.
She's like, I'm in it.
She's 80. Yeah.
You're like, to fall asleep.
Well, that should be your, you know, my 80-year-old great aunt.
Yeah, that should be on the trailer.
Well, have you guys thought about doing an LA release?
Yeah, well, we were in the Hollywood Film Festival. They haven't programmed their screening yet. We won the award at the award ceremony before, but they do the screenings throughout the year. We're hoping to have a summer screening for LA after our festival run is over.
That's awesome. Mm-hmm. It's got to be exciting.
Yeah, it was cool. It was at Paramount, at the big theater there, and all that stuff. So
just got to give you chills when you see the opening scene. You're like, oh my god, this is gonna.
It's it's so cool it's really cool on a big screen. Anytime you walk into the theater and there's people in there and they're excited, and you see the first shot come up and you hear the music and you like look around the audience, you can tell the people are into it. Like it's like, oh god, we did okay. We didn't screw this one up, thank god.
What was the biggest obstacle for each of you, and maybe for both of you, making this movie?
Probably each other.
Yeah. No, seriously, it's really? Yeah, we're both very difficult to deal with in our own ways, and I think being able to find that just way of making it work when sometimes it doesn't work, and sometimes something goes wrong that we blame on the other one, and then in hindsight realize it was not the other one's fault, but it's so easy to blame the other person for it. Like what was the thing that we realized is if it's good, we both get credit. If it's bad, I get the blame on it. But if it's a decision that Ben pressed me on set, like, we really should do this, I'm like, okay, we'll do it your way. If it's bad, I get to be like, you, your fault, not mine. I wrote it better. Sorry.
See, I like that. You guys have – that's how the Beatles did it. You know, they had that like, kind of chemistry that was just like, I'm going to strangle you, but let's make some great arts. That's kind of like what you need sometimes.
I also think that just biting off more than we could chew in the beginning, like most people with you know, the movie was made for under $1 million. Having that amount of money to make a movie like this is not easy. You need so much more, and just being able to get the entire production to work because it takes place in so many locations. There's a lot of special effects. There's constantly 4 to 5 people in every single scene inside of a cave. There's so many obstacles at the same time. It's just the movie in general was tough. Like it wasn't two people at a cabin in the woods sort of thing. Like I'd love to make a movie like that. No offense to any filmmakers who made a movie like that and think that I'm a pretentious asshole.
No, I mean, because there's an obstacle. It's like not only the location can be kind of like cabin fever, you know, cave fever, I guess we should say.
Cave fever.
You
know? Yeah. Time Trap 2, Cave Fever. Starring Black Girl with Flashlight.
I like it. See? You're already thinking about the sequel.
I'm going to write it down in my notes.
Let me ask you this. Is there a sequel or a prequel?
When we finished the first cut of the movie, I actually started to write a sequel for it because I thought that it was working really well and we had some interest from a television company. And that beginning of the sequel wound up being the beginning of this movie. It was such a cool opening. We wound up putting it on this one. So like this movie is like its own sequel in a way too.
That's awesome.
Yeah, that second phase of shooting is where we were able to put those ideas.
It's amazing that, you know, you hit so many kind of weird obstacles with the writing, with the shooting, like the fact that you went from GoPro, a couple shots of GoPros, to let's invest more and just kind of like regroup. I mean, that's got to be kind of like the most frustrating part of making something when you're in it and something you have to think, okay, which direction do we move in? How did you guys make those executive decisions? Did you kind of like lean on each other? Did you kind of do them together? Was it kind of unanimous?
Sometimes you don't know if it's right, and you just have to, like, sometimes we'll be like, what do we do? And we both are kind of like, shit, I don't know. What do we do? And we'll talk it out, and we'll go with whatever we think is the best thing. And if it doesn't work, we can hope to fix it, or at least we learn from it. If we're smart enough to where we can learn and not do the same mistake the next time, sort of. But most of the time we don't. There's a lot of times that, I shouldn't say most of the time, but there are often times where we don't know what it is. But sometimes we just know when something's working. If we shoot something a certain way, we're like, why isn't this working? And we'll think about it a second and go, oh, do this. And then immediately you know this was always going to work. It needed to work this way, though.
Yeah, and if it's a visual thing, we have our director of photography to lean on and get some input from him. You know, and anybody else, the actors. Like, if we're lost, I think we're pretty good about opening it up.
Keep moving. If you're lost, keep moving. Yeah, you've got everybody there. You're paying everybody.
Yeah.
We can keep shooting it until, you know, eventually. Yeah, I feel like it always...
Yeah, Mike, he can get a close-up while we talk.
Right. And that happened a lot. Like, that, yeah. People would turn around and ask us a question. I'm like, shit, I don't know the answer to that. And you're the only person who's supposed to know the answer to that. So you have to distract people, give them something to work on while you go and talk it out. And that's why, like, on the way to set every morning, I was rewriting pages because we realized that they weren't working. We'd go to bed that night and realize that something happened the day before that changed the movie, and I was like, shit, what are we gonna do? And then the next morning on the way, Ben was driving and I was rewriting the script in the car.
Dude, that's insane.
But most of the time we know, I feel like.
Mm-hmm.
You know. And then the visual effects, all that stuff is all a lot of that was a guessing game for me, and I just pretended like I knew.
Yeah, Ben did a lot of the visual effects. He had different companies all over the world that would send him he would hire them to do it, and they would do it, and he would basically, what do you call it, back reverse engineer it?
Yeah, so I would have, so these guys in Russia were helping us, and they would do a shot, and say I had, you know, 50 shots that were similar kind of effect.
Did you miss that?
They know. They know I listen. Nicely done.
Left hand,
see?
Too.
Try my.
Yeah, do it.
All right, go ahead. We're all listening.
Yeah, we're
I'm
still
going to do
listening.
No look.
Yeah, absolutely. No! Oh, one for okay. One.
But one they'd send me their work. I'd be like, okay, well, we can do these shots, but send me whatever you did, your After Effects file, and then I'll just reverse engineer whatever they did and have 50 more shots.
That's crazy. And how long is the movie?
Movie was 85 minutes.
So tell us about this school project.
What's this? Oh, this is like another trailer
for Professor.
Hold on.
What? Oh,
that's the story.
It auto played. Yeah, so we probably should have played that. If you're wondering which trailer,
better for radio.
Yeah, if you're wondering which trailer to watch, go to Vimeo and look for Time Trap.
You want me to play it?
Teaser. No, it's all right.
You sure?
Yeah, I'm sure because they'll watch it. We would rather them watch it anyway when they get off of here and not hear it on the radio. Right.
Yeah. So you said it's 85 minutes?
I think it's like 85 minutes. I can't remember. It's
been a while. It's 87. Yeah, with credits.
And how much was it before you made those edits?
Oh, man. I don't even know because it would go up and down. I think the first cut of it might have been like 98 minutes. Our first movie was 98 minutes.
Yeah, I remember that being.
And we thought it was weird that the next one was 98 minutes also. Then it just – one of my friends in film school told me a long time ago that it's not about adding to the movie usually to make it better. It's almost always what you can take out of it. And I noticed that seemed to be true. Like it's all about the pacing and keeping the audience into it. We're so easy to get bored and are easily bored that we have to have something going on all the time. We're the MTV generation, and having a movie that had a really brisk pace was important. Like the original movie was a little bit slower, and there was more character stuff, and there were more jokes. All of that stuff had to go for the sake of making a movie that, like, people who were thinking about their Instagram feed would want to stay in the movie the entire time.
It's tough to make art for people like that sometimes, you know?
Yeah, and it's not getting easier either.
Yeah, right. It's getting worse like that. But, and how many pages were the script?
Oh, man. I don't remember. Like, probably around 100. Yeah,
because they say
it's one to one.
Page a minute,
yeah, it's
right?
One to one. But there were so many changes. Like I remember going back and I did a rewrite of the script based on what the movie looked like, and sent that rewrite to an actor to play the professor character. I had to change everything to make it actually seem like the same movie. And it was a, you know, completely different length of the script, and there was, you know, different the turning points were at different spots also.
All right, so let's say you're sitting at a film executive table right now. And that film executive hasn't seen the movie. Give me three movies or pitch it in a way that our listeners can go, oh, I want to see it because of that.
It's like it's a group of kids like from Goonies going into a cave, and they discover that time passes differently underground than it does on the surface. So there's like an Indiana Jones element to it, but then there's also like the sci-fi of Interstellar.
I like that. How do you do?
That's perfect.
Would you agree?
Yeah.
100%?
That should be perfect. I had to
no
do
changes?
That 100 times.
That's our four-year pitch.
Well, the reason I ask is, you know, for Stranger Things, I heard the guys went into a meeting, and they played Goonies, E.T., and X-Files, and said this show is going to be like this, this, and this. And they didn't have anything. They didn't have script. They didn't have anything. And the executives were like, we like it. And I was just like, that is crazy to me that they were able to do that.
Well,
They had done a film.
They did a movie called Hidden,
right.
I think.
Yeah. Right.
So they probably had a relationship with them. But Yeah.
Maybe from now on, instead of working on scripts, Ben and I should just sit in a cafe together and think of like movies from the 80s and 90s that we're still in nostalgia for. All right, I want to do Clueless with Under Siege and a little bit of John Leguizamo and The Pest. That's the movie we're doing next.
Just make sure you make it with that Instagram generation. Otherwise, you're out.
Of course. We can get John Leguizamo now.
Oh, yeah.
So let me ask you this now, too. What was that kind of zen moment for you when you were in the creation of it? Whether it was the script is done, whether the edit's done. What was that moment where you're like, oh my God, we're serious. This is like the most intensely incredible feeling right now.
I would say that the two things were anytime an actor gave a really good performance that was better than what we wanted. That was always really exciting because we thought, oh man, this is better than we are. We need to make sure that we're as good as this. The other thing was whenever we had a friends and family screening at the Lamley Theater in Santa Monica, and our lead actor came up to us afterwards and was like, I never knew what you guys were doing because y'all were always doing so much crazy stuff, but you did it. Like, the movie's great. And Ben's girlfriend came up to me and she was like, or wife now, she came up to me and was like, Mark, it's so good. Like, and I could tell, like, she genuinely, I'm sounding like I'm bragging here, but like, you could just tell that these people really liked it. And we never know if people are going to like it until they watch it. Like, you can think that something's amazing, but until people actually see it, like, you never know. Like, your mom's always going to think something's good.
Right. But it's tough to get that barometer. And sometimes the people you love most are going to be the most honest with you, too.
Well, I want the people who hate me to like it.
Right. Like, damn it. I hate that dude. But he made a great movie.
Right. Well, I think at that same screening, we had two. So there's two kids in the movie. They're about 13. And Max lives out here. So he brought, you know, what was it, like 25 kids, 25 of his friends to that same thing. And they loved it. And to show it to kids for the first time, I think that was
cool. A way better answer. I wish I would have said that.
See?
I'm saying that next time. Next time
we
do
it. You guys are a good team.
Right. He says something good. I remember it.
You're
and
the
write
business.
It,
yeah. You're the creative. I like it. Put it together. Well, I can't wait to see this movie. Time Trap. Where can people find it? Or what's the next, you know, screening that people can kind of check it out?
If you're listening from Nigeria, I think it's on like public access TV right now. Same thing for South Africa. It's not out here yet. But if you're in Texas, you can see it at the Hill Country Film Festival in Fredericksburg on, I believe it's April 28th, and then in Houston at World Fest on April 21st. So we'll be in Texas quite a bit during the end of this month, and then we have one more screening, or two more screenings at another film festival that we'll announce pretty soon.
That's awesome. Well, guys, we're gonna have to have you back.
Yes, please.
We love it.
You know what? This is such a cool idea and a great movie. And
I'll wear my Mickey Mouse shirt.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
LA represents. Well, we're going to have to see what you guys are up to. I know that you guys are going to be up to a whole bunch of crazy things, including more movies, maybe more sequels and prequels to this film.
One could hope. I have the same mouse. I have that exact same mouse.
I wish it was mine, but it's not mine.
Yeah, that's great.
Well, anyways, on behalf of Eddie, who's not here, and Ben and Mark, thank you guys for being guests
tonight.
Thanks for
having us.
This sounds like an exciting movie. Steven Levine's in the house, too. He made this whole happen. This thing all is good. All right, we'll see you guys next week. Check out Time Trap at a theater soon, we hope. Right, guys?
Yes, sir.
That's right.
All right.